Today on Inside Utah Politics, lawmakers eyeing big reforms to the judiciary. We're joined by voices on both sides of the aisle to weigh proposals from packing the Supreme Court to making certain laws immune to injunctions. And changing Utah's constitution also on the table this year, how one lawmaker plans to tackle one of the issues that got the legislature in trouble with the high court. We're hitting the halfway point in the legislative session. Here are the proposals gaining steam and making this week's headlines.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrts.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Lindsay Ehrts on location at the Utah State Capitol for the legislative session. Let's go inside Utah politics. After months of tension between the legislature and the courts, judicial reform has arrived on Capitol Hill. Lawmakers are filing a litany of new bills aimed at reshaping that relationship. They include making some laws immune to injunctions, raising the bar for voters to keep judges on the bench, and even taking on the state Supreme Court, expanding it from 5 justices to a yet unknown number. Now, already these proposals are raising separation of powers concerns and sparking fierce debate on Capitol Hill. I want to welcome in our panel now, two guests who are very familiar with Utah's judiciary. State Senator Todd Weiler from the Woods Cross area, also the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Republican. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
And Greg Skordis on the Democratic side, former Democratic candidate for Attorney General and local attorney as well. Greg, thanks for being here.
You bet.
All right, let's start with one of the newest proposals on Utah's Capitol Hill, and that is to expand the state Supreme Court. House members opened a bill file and says they will look at adjusting the numbers. Right now we're at 5. Todd, I'll start with you, Senator. Your biggest argument for why we should expand the Supreme Court.
Well, I want to be clear, it's not my proposal. I did float the same idea about 3 years ago. And after talking with some of the justices myself, they said, if you're going to add more appellate judges, we need it at the Court of Appeals level. That's where the backlog is. And so the Constitution of our state says you have to have at least 5 justices, but the number is set by statute. So that's clearly something the legislature could do.
Okay. Greg, do you like this idea, or do you think 5 is sufficient for our population, for the court cases?
Maybe both. I mean, I think we're doing fine with our Supreme Court. They're backlogged. There's a problem there. But I actually, in anticipation of this, went around the country and saw how many Supreme Court justices states have, and 5 is the bottom end. I mean, there are no states that have less than 5, obviously. 7 seems to be the number that most states at our size, at our level, have. So, yeah, I don't think it's a big problem. I think we're doing a good job. The thing about the Supreme Court is when they hear a case, at least the cases I've argued before them, and I just argued one, all 5 justices sit. The Court of Appeals, you get a panel of 3. So if you've got, what do we have, like 9 Court of Appeals judges right now, and they sit in panels of 3 different panels. So they could probably get more done, if that makes any sense. Where the Supreme Court, they're all in on virtually every case.
So the argument from the sponsor, Representative Jefferson Moss, who's the leadership over on the House side, is the caseload, the workload, the backlog, like you're suggesting. But if the issue is at the appellate level, why do we need to expand the court?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I have a great deal of respect for Jefferson Moss. I don't know that he's had the same conversations that I've had. We have Senator Brammer, who's been complaining that the output from the Utah Supreme Court is lower than most courts. I think they've only had 64 decisions released last year. If you look around the country, that's very, very low. But I will say this for expanding it. We had 5 Supreme Court justices 100 years ago. We have 5 today. The state has grown by about 2.5 million people. And so there is more litigation. There are more appeals being filed.
Greg, do you think this is any effort by the legislature to stack the Supreme Court? Presumably these are appointed by Republican administrations.
Yeah, right? That's the thing. When you look nationally, you think, okay, well, you've got a Republican president that appoints justices. You've got a Democrat every 4-8 years. And so they can appoint justices that sort of have their mindset. But every Supreme Court justice we have right now in Utah that I can think of was appointed by a Republican governor
and confirmed by a Republican Senate.
Absolutely. So I don't know how stacking would make a difference at this point. And I would say this, the governors that we've had in the last, at least this century, have done a really good job of appointing judges. And they seem not to do it based on their politics, but on their intellect, on their education. I think that our governors, and it seems like the Senate, is on board with really smart people being justices, which is why I'm not going to ever be on the Supreme Court. But they seem to appreciate that.
Well, and our state constitution says you can't have a partisan test for judges in Utah. And I'll point out, the judges are supposed to be nonpartisan, but we recently appointed a judge who ran for attorney general as a Democrat, I believe in 2016. I'm talking about Charles Stormont. So the whole Utah Senate knew this guy ran as a Democrat. We still, I think, unanimously confirmed him as a judge.
Okay, we'll watch to see how this moves through the legislature in the coming weeks. Let's switch now to a pair of bills that critics are really saying could limit the ability for outside groups and people to challenge laws passed here at the legislature. Senator Wyler, I'll start with you. One of these would make it so when injunctions are issued, these are rulings that stop a law from going into effect, presumably on their constitutionality issues, that the injunctions couldn't take effect once an appeal is filed with the state Supreme Court. And that would essentially mean that a law could take effect that is presumably unconstitutional and then be reversed the other way, as opposed to right now being stopped and then implemented. Tell me why you supported this in your committee.
Yeah, so I actually held it, and then we redrafted. This is Senate Bill 203 from Senator Brammer. And let me tell you, we live in a society right now where people are very suspicious of the judiciary, and I think that's unfortunate. But you see President Trump on the federal level, he says, hey, if you want to quit your job, I'll pay you severance pay for 9 months. And we have a federal judge stopping that. Now, that's already been released, but we have some judges who are quick to second guess the President of the United States, Congress, and the state legislature. So 3 years ago, when the U.S. Supreme Court, almost 3 years ago, they overturned Roe versus Wade, the state legislature had a law that was triggered immediately. So that was like July 1st of 2022. And we had a case filed by Planned Parenthood. It was assigned to a judge randomly. And then that judge happened to be the presiding judge. He reassigned it with under, I'd say, suspicious circumstances to an older judge, known liberal, who was going to be retiring soon. And that second judge put that law on hold. And so you have a very Republican state, and he put the law on hold saying, we're not sure if the Utah Constitution allows abortion. And now 3 years later, that law is still on hold. And I think a lot of legislators are upset by that process.
So, but is that not evidence that you're using the judiciary to kind of determine the way you want laws
and
to
is go? It not evidence that maybe the judiciary is putting their thumb, they didn't run for office, they're not lawmakers, they're supposed to be interpreting the law. And so so ultimately, any constitutional question about a state law will be decided by the Supreme Court, the Utah Supreme Court, not the U.S. Supreme Court. I think what Senator Brammer's saying is let's have a rocket docket. Let's speed up these appeals and get it to the Supreme Court now rather than 3 or 4 years from now.
Greg, you've actually called this a power grab, cited it as the reason you believe the legislature is trying to block laws from being challenged when people don't like their challenge their constitutionality. Explain why you feel that way.
I guess what troubles me is, for example, the legislature was upset at the same judge for the same issue, and they went back and said, well, we're going to change the standard that a judge has to apply when issuing a preliminary injunction. And they tracked the federal standard, so it wasn't like they came out of the blue. But it seems like the legislature is looking at these, what happens, a judge will issue a ruling, and if the legislature doesn't like it, with all respect, they say, well, let's change the law so that the judge has to refocus his or her determination to be consistent with that. And that's just what's troubling with me, because we've had those laws in effect for decades, forever, and changing them seems to be a complete reaction to a judicial decision that the legislature doesn't like.
Senator, you're side-eyeing
well,
me.
So Greg is right. When you shine a light on something, sometimes you learn things. That standard was changed. It turned out, I don't even know if Greg knows this, we were an outlier. We were the only state in the country doing this. And I even researched, the reason we did it was because the 11th Circuit started doing it, and then they stopped because they were overruled by the Supreme Court. So there may have been a political motive behind it, but I think where we landed was where every other state and the federal government is anyway.
That's fair. So. That's exactly right. However, the new one is a little bit different, because now what they're saying is this: if a judge issues a preliminary injunction, and you're right, sometimes that means the law's on hold for what could be months, maybe a year or so, until the Supreme Court gets to it. That preliminary injunction is now under being looked at under a standard of what we call clear and convincing evidence. In other words, the judge has to find that the law is unconstitutional by a pretty high standard.
And can
whereas
prevail on
whereas
merits,
now
right?
It's like, well, it doesn't smell right, it doesn't look right, it's more likely not to be constitutional. I'm going to put that into effect. The legislature is saying, no, you have to have a higher standard to do that, which creates a problem that you said earlier, which is, okay, so the judge says, well, I don't know that you quite have that standard. You're probably going to win, but we're not real certain. And so under this, the law would go into effect while it's under appeal, and then it would be flipped over again, maybe, by the Supreme Court, which doesn't make sense to me.
I think people should be just as concerned that we have a Utah Constitution that says nothing about abortion. We have a long history of the state of the legislature opposing abortion, and we have one single judge who's now retired who says, yeah, I'm not going to let this law go in effect, and 3 years later, it's still not in effect. I think people should be concerned about that, and that, I think, is what Senator Brammer's trying to address.
I think that, and I'll just take issue with that a little bit. I think there's reason to look at the Utah Constitution and our founding fathers of this state and say they were more concerned about individual rights, including women's rights, let's face it, when we formed our state, because they'd of the oppression that they'd had coming and forming this state. So I think the Utah Constitution probably does have some greater protections for individuals making personal decisions. And I think if you took a vote among Utah voters, they probably wouldn't support the trigger ban that the legislature enacted.
And yet, everyone that voted for it pretty much has been reelected twice since then.
Sure. So. I agree.
Such good debate.
Thanks to gerrymandering. Thanks to the way. Thanks to the way.
We're a Republican state. Look at the statewide races.
You're right.
Such good debate. We can go round and round on it. I want to get to one more issue before I let you both go. A proposal to, when we retain judges, we do a retention elections here in Utah. Right now, the threshold is you win 50%, you keep your job. Lawmaker wants to up that threshold to 67%. Greg, I'll start with you real quick. Do you feel like that is too high of a threshold? Is that making it harder for judges to be elected? Where do you stand?
Or retained. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I don't think it's too high. I don't know that it would have made a difference in the last 20 years. I've practiced for 43 years, and I can only think of maybe two judges that were not retained. So I don't think it's too high of a standard. Again, I think it's an unnecessary standard. It's another jab at the judiciary because they're not crazy about some things that they're doing. But I also think the judiciary should be held to a high standard. And we do retain our judges.
Most of our judges are currently above that two-thirds standard. I probably won't vote for this. I understand why it's being run. But, you know, I was just reelected with 47% of the vote in the four-way race, so I'm probably not going to impose a higher standard of judges that I have for myself. So
we're going to wait to see which issues make it through the legislature. All of these proposals are still working their way through the process. Gentlemen, thank you so much
for joining me today.
Thank you. We appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Greg.
Still ahead on Inside Utah Politics, taking a pen to the state constitution, we sit down with the author of one of a handful of new amendments circulating on the Hill.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
Welcome back in. Thank you for joining us today. I'm joined by Representative Anthony Lubey. We're going to talk proposals to change Utah's constitution. Representative, thank you for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
You represent the Kearns Magna area, but you have a proposal to change Utah's constitution. Now, there are currently 5 proposals with text to change our constitution, and then another 5 that have been numbered, and that just means they don't have text yet. So, could there be 10 proposals on our Constitution? That seems like a lot of changes.
Yeah, and it seems kind of unlikely. I mean, usually when bills are going through the process, they get vetted out, and so there's a good possibility that in the process, bills will get narrowed down. The other issue, though, when we were looking at budget, and I'm on the General Government Appropriations Committee, and so we were looking at how much to appropriate or recommend to be appropriated for these type of notices. And the $1.4 million was in regards to a full-page ad. So there is some spacing restrictions as well. So that's being considered when we're looking at how many of these constitutional amendments we'll put on the ballot.
I want to circle back to that cost in a minute, but let's dive into your proposal because of these 5, yours deals with a significant issue that we saw over the summer where the state Supreme Court voided 2 constitutional amendment proposals to change the Constitution, dealing with education and then dealing with initiatives because of this publication requirement. Our Constitution right now requires that these be noticed in newspapers statewide. Yes, there are still some. And then also 2 months before the election. Well, the legislature failed to do that. The court ruled, And so that's why they voided those amendments. So talk to me about what your proposal would do.
So my bill is to try to modernize it a bit. So the joint resolution is to modify the Utah Constitution to remove the publication requirement in newspapers and instead have that defined in statute. I also am clarifying that 2 months is 60 days. There was some concerns about it, with some months having more days than others, how that would play out. So that just clarifies it. And then the bill that would be a companion to that resolution that would go into effect, assuming the resolution passed, would specify the publication requirement.
Which would be what?
Right now is a Class A notice, which you're looking at a notice on the Utah Public Notice website and then on the legislative website as well.
Yeah, so for viewers who may not be completely in the know with the lingo up here, that just means that your proposal will ask voters whether they want the Constitution to say we should approve this change in state law. Mm-hmm. Now, I think one of the concerns, though, is that state law can change, and it does every year, and we run cleanup bills, and we can tweak it, and the legislature can alter it and amend it. So what assurances can you give voters that these online publication requirements that you're seeking right now, this public notice website and the LG's website, wouldn't change and wouldn't become some, you know, super easy way? You know what I'm asking? Like, just sort of sneaking things in.
So a couple things. One, I've tried to make sure I collaborate with people that have concerns about this on both sides of the aisle to make sure we have just good policy. Also, as we have this discussion, we're trying to keep it consistent with the requirements that we have already for counties, cities, so that way it's fairly consistent. And the bill portion also has language in there regarding ballot initiatives that they would have the same noticing requirements that the government would have as well. So once they've gathered their signatures, turned it in, they're done. They don't have to notice it because it'll just be uploaded to those places by the governmental entity.
So I want to circle back to the cost for a second, because fiscal analysts have said that each of these proposals, and again, right now, we'll call it five, there are five that are being proposed, have a fiscal note or a price tag of $1.4 million each. But like you're saying, when you publish these, at least in the requirement in newspapers now, before your proposal seeks to change it, mm-hmm. you can put maybe four on a page. Are you presuming that each one of these are going to cost $1.4 million each, or do you think that you'll get a volume discount, if you will?
Yeah, I think that's what we're kind of anticipating, is that there will be some economies of scale, that since we're doing more, that it'll be cheaper. And so that's what we're kind of budgeting right now.
Can you bank on that, though, with taxpayer money? I mean, and we have to fund this. We have to set the budget, right?
Yes. Well, and that's really what's going to be also a decider. I mean, we have to set the budget before we have to notice everything. So whatever that amount is, we have to make it work.
Yeah, because other things viewers should probably know is that your proposal seeks to get rid of the newspaper requirement, but it won't change it for things that are on the ballot in 2026.
No. In fact, this amendment will have to be noticed in newspapers, too.
Right. So your amendment alone could cost $1.4 million, and then however many other we run, like the price tag is still TBD.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So let's dive into a couple more of these proposals. One of the resolutions, and just so viewers know, when a proposal to change the Constitution comes forward, it comes forward in a resolution, not just a bill. And then we, if the legislature approves it with a two-thirds majority, then it goes on the next regular election ballot, general election ballot, which in this case would be 2026. So this one asks voters whether any statewide initiative that raises taxes should be approved with a 60% voter approval threshold instead of just a simple majority, which would be 50%. So talk to me about the legislature's thinking there in terms of raising this requirement for citizen-led ballot initiatives.
Well, I can share what the concern is, but I will say that there's going to be a lot of debate on this issue. And the concern with it is that sometimes when there's a fiscal amount attached to some of these ballot initiatives, people aren't aware of the cost. They might like the concept. And so sometimes that's not communicated very well. And so the concern is that they want to make sure that enough people understand the impact to approve something like that.
Well. Does this just make initiatives harder, though, to pass? We have seen this in the past, right, where the legislature doesn't like certain initiatives that are being run. We've seen them tweak them and change them. Some of those are tied up in the courts because they may have gone too far. Is this another one of those proposals?
It's not one that's targeted towards that. I mean, I think that may be a consequence as part of it. But the original intent is to try to make it so that way people have more awareness of what they're trying to pass, especially how it's going to impact the budget of the state.
So if you were a betting man, how many proposals do you think will end up on the 2026 ballot?
Oh, I'm not good at betting. I lose every time.
It's illegal.
I'm always
right?
all in.
Yeah.
So, so I would say, if I had to guess, I would imagine it's not going to be the full amount. It'll probably be something closer to maybe half that amount when we're all said and done.
Maybe five?
Yeah. Five, six, four, something like that.
When I talked to your counter chambers leadership about this, they sort of said, we'll continue to prioritize which ones move forward, right? So which ones pass and make it on the ballot. What is the priority? What is the criteria for that prioritization in your mind?
Well, I think the first major priority is which ones pass. So once they... which bills get to the finish line, and then of those, then they'll start to look at which ones are the most significant that would have an impact on the state that are necessary and can't wait for two or three more years.
One final question I want to talk to you about. I think some people have concerns over who writes the ballot language for these constitutional change proposals. Right now, that power was recently changed to fall to the Speaker of the House and the Senate President. Do you see that changing anytime soon?
Currently, I don't. I'm not trying to address that in my bill right now, and I don't know if any of my colleagues are trying to address that at the moment.
And why is that the best course of action for these constitutional amendments, as opposed to legislative lawyers who are supposed to be independent and presumably wrote those in the past?
Well, the Speaker and the Senate President know what the intent of the bills or the constitutional amendments is, and so they are trying to make sure that it's conveyed appropriately to the public.
Representative Anthony LeBay, thank you for walking me through all of those weedy proposals. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We'll be back with week four legislative headlines. All right, before we wrap up our show, let's check on some bills we've been keeping an eye on. Now, the clock is ticking for Governor Spencer Cox to decide the fate of the controversial proposal to regulate Utah's public sector unions. Now, the full legislature has passed House Bill 267. This would prevent the state from recognizing the union's right to bargain for their employees collectively. Teachers, police officers, and firefighters have asked the governor to veto this bill, but so far, he hasn't really told us which way he's leaning.
We're still having lots of discussions on that bill. There are important parts of it. I understand why some people are upset about it too, but we're taking our time to review it. We're getting lots of input, and we'll be making a decision soon.
Now, the chatter on the Hill says lawmakers could revisit a compromise, but unless that happens, the governor has until Wednesday to veto this bill. He's also facing calls to veto a bill to regulate where transgender college students can live. The ACLU wants the governor to say no to House Bill 269. If made law, it would require trans students to stay in dorms aligning with their sex assigned at birth or single rooms in co-ed dorms. Lawmakers passed the bill, citing privacy concerns, but the ACLU says it erodes rights and fuels hostility. Now, we've reached out to the governor, and he's told ABC4 before that he supports the idea of this bill. Now, some lawmakers are also asking the state to double the money to the Utah Fits All Scholarship. This is the school funding program that supporters call school choice, but critics call a voucher program. And we were expecting a House bill like 455 to come up this year. This bill would also make some tweaks to how families can spend their scholarship money. Supporters say the program allows for parents to make the best choices for their kids, but critics are concerned about more public money going to private education. And finally, a proposal to add runoffs to Utah's primary elections is on hold in the House. House Bill 231 would impact statewide and federal races, requiring a runoff if no candidate gets more than 50%. Currently, candidates can win those primaries with a plurality. This passed through the committee comfortably, but on the floor, the bill's sponsor circled it, pending a new draft to make some technical changes. Well, that does it for Inside Utah Politics today. Don't forget, if you have any local political stories you'd like to see, make sure to reach out. You can email insideutahpolitics@abc4.com. You can also follow me on social media on X, Blue Sky, and Threads at Lindsay on Air. Lindsay spelled with an A. That's also my Instagram handle. Now, you can also find our show online in podcast form. Just search for Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz wherever you get your podcasts. Well, thanks for being here, everyone. We will see you next week.